Hello, friends, lovers, countrymen, and most importantly for 2020, survivors. Welcome one and all to our final episode of the year and our final extra bonus content episode, The Third Foot, as paid for by our noble Patreon supporters. Whether you are one or are not one, thank you so much for listening and keeping the podcast going through this of all years. If you're not one, perhaps you might want to add as one of your New Year's resolutions for 2021, supporting this noble podcast that celebrates heroic failure. I mean, 2021 could be the year of that. And if you want to do so, you can go to patreon.com/worstfootforward. Talking of 2021, myself and my excellent co-host, who I will introduce properly in a moment, have decided that we need to enter it in bullish spirit. And so we have decided that we are going to make a series of predictions for what is to come over the following 12 months, because, hey, they can't be as bad as what we've all just experienced, right?
Right. Right.
And with me is the charming vaccine to my unwelcome pangolin-based pandemic disease, Barry McStay.
Just call me Mystic McStay, gazing into the crystal ball here. I feel like we've gathered everyone around like a little sacrificial bonfire on the eve of the 31st of December, and we're going to burn an effigy of 2020 on top of it, say goodbye to the old year, see in the new one, you know, sacrifice a few goats, go wild, have some orgies. Just like, it's going to be a real release of emotions to finally flip the page on the calendar over to 2021.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, this is Worst Foot Forward, so we'll be sacrificing a few dogs.
sacrificing a few orgies and having a few goats, I think, is probably more out of style.
I always remember when I was much younger, my brother telling me about if there were ever Jehovah's Witnesses or Mormons knocking on the door, he'd open the door and go, "Ah, good evening, come in. The goat's on the fire and the virgin's just ripened."
And that's how we intend to enter this new year.
Correct. So yeah. I believe we were divvying it up where you were going to do the odd months and I was going to do the even months.
So I'm hoping there are more even months in this year ahead than there were in the past month, in the past year, and not so many odd ones.
Oh, I thought that was just you just going, it just seemed like it was March for years.
Forever, yeah. Someone the other day said to me, basically the year has gone January, February, lockdown, Christmas, which is about right. Yes, I had a look at what I think might happen in January 2021. Obviously, on the 1st of January, Britain is going to leave the EU for good. But I have a funny feeling that about 4 days later, Britain's going to knock on the door of the EU's house going, "I think I've left my handbag somewhere. Do you mind if I come in and have a little look around?" And like several weeks later, they'll still be there. They'll have, you know, put their feet up on the sofa. They'll be watching new episodes of, you know, EastEnders, asking for toast and things like that. And they'll just never leave. They'll be that housemate who is gone but hasn't really moved out. I think Brexit is going to lead to a lot of it's going to lead to a lot of very stubborn people going, "We were right. We wanted to not have nice clothes or food or healthcare anymore. This is exactly the sort of sovereignty we envisaged," and a lot of buyer's remorse on the other side.
I think there could be. I think also it could end up with a favourite thing from this show, a lot of micronations being declared around the United Kingdom. Wouldn't it be great if suddenly, like, how many Remainers are there? Probably about 30 million. If there were 30 million separate micronations set up and they all decided to start a treaty with the EU.
Yeah, I'll live in the country of Greenwich going forward. What else is going to happen? Joe Biden's going to be sworn in as president on the 20th of January. So at that point, I imagine David Bowie will reincarnate himself and go, "I just decided to sit out the last 4 years."
I did think about Biden's inauguration and thought, what is Trump going to do?
I have an idea of what Trump might do.
Go on then.
I think he's not going to show up, obviously. He's going to go south to Mar-a-Lago and he'll have a fake second inauguration of his own. He'll pretend he's president. He'll like set himself up as president of Florida. He'll be signing things and pardoning turkeys and sitting behind desks of various sizes. And then at some point he's just going to snap. He's just at some point it's going to occur to him that he's not actually president anymore. And he's going to rampage through Disney World to punch the President Biden automata in the Hall of Presidents. And then he and Melania just move into Cinderella's castle.
That seems the appropriate place for them.
He's got perfectly tiny feet. They'll fit into any glass slipper.
And it is the castle built by a white supremacist. It feels absolutely on the nose. I was looking it up, actually, because I thought he will have an alternate inauguration and then will return to the White House, but he can't go to the actual White House. So I found that there are 9 replicas of the White House around the world. There are ones in, so in America, they're in Decatur, Georgia, McLean, Virginia, Clermont, Florida, Carlsbad, California, oh, and in Winter Haven, Florida, too, and Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin, and Springfield, Illinois. But the ones I want him to go to are the ones in Hangzhou, China.
Of course.
In Klagenfurt, Austria, which is a miniature, or the one that I think we all know he's going to go to, the Chornomin Palace in Chornomin Village, Vinnytsia Oblast in Ukraine.
There he is. That's it. That's what he was really ringing the president of Ukraine about.
Yes.
I think most presidential libraries have, a lot of the presidential libraries anyway, have sort of replicas of the Oval Office from the period that person was president. But obviously, I mean, the Trump presidential library is going to be a cardboard box with some 70s copies of Playboy stuck under a bed somewhere. So I don't imagine, unless he gets a little tiny replica White House on the way out. And I mean, obviously in January, we're expecting really good things to happen. That's the other thing. We're sort of going, oh, new year, new... Like, you've referenced it already. Within days, it's going to be like, squirrels can give us cancer, or the whole world is built on an Indian burial ground full of nukes, or oxygen is racist now, or something like that. And we just... It's just going to be 2021, we'll reset and go, no, you're in a time loop forever now.
Yeah, that seems highly plausible. But by the end of that time, we'll have got to February, and there'll be another new year. Because in February, it'll be the Chinese New Year. It'll be the Chinese New Year of the Ox.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah, and oxen are obviously used as farming tools in agricultural society. So the Chinese Year of the Ox is the symbol of diligence, persistence, and honesty. And given what has happened in 2020, because of that, I think that there's a strong chance the world will flip on its axis as the events of 2020 come up against a year that does not represent them. Alternatively, you know, being quite an agricultural signifier of a year, there's every chance that by February we could have returned to a feudal barter economy, certainly in this country. I mean, there's a very biblical animal as well, the oxen, and one, again, good to sacrifice to appease the gods. Another thing that will be happening, particularly in Kent, I imagine. And the other thing that happens in February is Valentine's Day, where obviously... tradition in this country, when you reach your 100th birthday, you get a letter from the Queen. Under the current administration, on Valentine's Day, you will get a vial of semen from Boris Johnson.
And do you drink it? Do you use it as disinfectant? Who knows? You inject it straight into the veins. I think it's going to be, transporting that is going to be like transporting the Pfizer vaccine. Like anything less than 70 degrees below zero and you get immediately pregnant. That's how potent his semen is.
I mean, I imagine it's just like frog spawn. Who'd want to go inside 10 Downing Street now? They're just like tiny little pupae with haystacked headed tadpoles going... Just horrific. So that's my prediction for February, is that the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom will attempt to impregnate everyone, probably under the guise of libertarianism and thumbing our noses at the EU.
Yeah, and also we'll be missing all of the former EU workers. We need to repopulate quickly to replace them.
Yes.
March. I reckon by March is roughly when the vaccine is going to start rolling out properly.
Yeah.
And they're saying they're going to have campaigns led by beloved figures to encourage people to get their shots. So I'm imagining the likes of Stephen Fry, Morgan Freeman, Malala, or Danny Dyer perhaps helping out on that front. I also think that we've spent so long with the vaccine and all the stuff that goes with it, we've spent so long with the virus and all the stuff that goes with it, that I think vaccine chic is going to become fashionable in the same way that masks became a fashion item. So you're going to get people with getting tattoos of the little plasters, the little circular plasters you get on your arm when you get a jab. And then obviously having as many shots as possible would be a status symbol. You don't just want the Pfizer vaccine. You want the Oxford, the AstraZeneca. You want the Moderna one. You're trying to, like, collecting Panini football stickers or various Pokemon. And I'm thinking perhaps the best way to encourage people to get the vaccine is with a mobile game called Vaccine Go, where you try and gamify the vaccine experience in some way. The only problem being a bit like Pokemon Go, it might get wildly out of hand with hordes of vaccine hunters storming hospitals, which will lead to doctors and nurses having to give them placebos to placate them. But then the band Placebo might front a campaign encouraging people to satisfy the vaccine cravings by getting placebos, and then placebo injections become a status symbol, and a new game premieres called Placebo Go, and doctors are forced to give the placebo placebo hunters, the COVID vaccine. It just turns into a really vicious cycle of people getting various vaccines.
Yeah, and then the band The Vaccines sue everyone.
And I have no facts about the band The Vaccines. And one other thing that's happening in March, of course, is St. Patrick's Day, which is coming, was cancelled. The St. Patrick's Week festivities were cancelled in Ireland in 2020. And I don't know if everyone knows the famous story about St. Patrick is that he drove the snakes out of Ireland. There are no snakes in Ireland. And so the story is that St. Patrick drove them out. And for the longest time, I have envisaged somebody getting a little too drunk in the planning of the St. Patrick's Day festivities, suggesting, why don't we just like release some snakes in front of the, you know, the ceremonies, and we'll have the Grand Marshal of St. Patrick's Day of the parade just like drive them away again, and it'll be a total disaster, but it gives us the opportunity for several years down the line to make a film with Samuel L. Jackson called Snakes on a Parade, and that only is the reason that it should happen.
That is tremendous. I sort of feel like Ireland having a year off St. Patrick's Day, it's going to be the boozing equivalent of the Yellowstone super volcano. And
yeah.
Dublin is going to look like fucking Sarajevo in 1997 on April, on the day after St. Patrick's Day, or so on March 18th.
Yeah.
Wow, so that'll be March. April the 1st will be April Fool's Day, when the World Health Organization will just go on the television and go, psych, it never existed. Be amazing if they didn't, wouldn't it?
That would be so good.
As viewers of the news today in the United Kingdom will know, the first man and second person in this country to be vaccinated was called William Shakespeare, which is just irritating. It feels like the government have just looked at the census and gone, right, who's got an appropriately uplifting name? There's no Winston Churchill's, in you go. But obviously, April 23rd, Shakespeare's birthday and death day, and clearly next year, his resurrection day. It's coming.
Shakespeare, 33 and a third.
Yeah. And also on April the 19th, 62 years of Castro rule will be ended in Cuba, because Raul Castro will be standing down as first secretary of the Communist Party to be replaced by Miguel Diaz-Canel, who is definitely a three-time bantamweight world champion.
That's what Cuba's going to have to turn to now. They like a strong man in Cuba, in both the sporting field and in terms of, you know, dictatorships.
Well, I think that Cuba in the post-COVID world is going to become a little bit of a haven, because I think once the Castros go, it's going to become the 51st and a half state after us. And with their exceptional healthcare, I think it's basically going to become a spa island. And considering how much the country loves boxing, you can enjoy that pun.
I was going to correct you and say it's pronounced Havana, not Haven, but we don't need to do that.
No, we don't.
In May, I'm turning 36.
In May, I'm turning 38.
But I don't know what age your dad is, but at 36, I'll be exactly half the age my dad will also be next year, so he'll be 72, which makes me immediately disappointed that I, in turn, do not have a child of 18, or that he does not have a father aged 144. Just to complete the symmetry, would it be nice? If only I'd known at the age of 18, I could have tried to set it up.
That's a hell of a chat up line. Listen, we need to have kids. Why? Because it's mathematically pleasing.
Yeah. Well, I imagine there's only one point in your life where you'll be exactly half the age of the parent, so it feels like quite a bit of a milestone.
Yeah, oh God, it's going to be when my dad's 80.
Hey, well, that can temper all the complaints about you when you turn 40, I guess.
Yeah, and that would be quite satisfying to have a child at age 20 as you're 40, as your dad is 80. What you really want is to have it of just every generation is born every 20 years, metronomically.
Yeah.
Because then you could have six generations if people are living to the age of Moses.
Yeah, and also you'd have, you know, 20 years of not having to, you know, you could use the maternity wards for other stuff. Every, you know, the squirrel pandemics that we're gonna have. And the other thing that I didn't think of anything particularly momentous happening in May, but every year it seems there's like a new app sneaks up on us. So I figure about May is the point at which you and I in our mid-30s will become aware of a new social media app which all young people will have been using for the previous like 6 months. They're probably already using it now.
Can I just point out there, ladies and gentlemen, that was true friendship, because a minute ago, Barry said, I'm turning 38, and then he said, I'm going to be in my mid-30s. And that is the sort of mathematics that can only be carried out by a gay man who works in the performing arts.
You're so welcome. Ben's playing age, of course, is below 30. So obviously that made me think of TikTok. TikTok has 800 million users. It's obviously the breakout app of this year, and it was launched in 2016 in China as an app called Douyin, and then was released from inside China. Read all the allegory and metaphor into that you want. But it has 800 million users, but it's been downloaded 2 billion times, which makes me wonder where the other 1.2 billion people have gone.
Well, I don't want to seem too much of a tin hat conspiracy theorist, but there's quite a lot in the architecture behind TikTok where it has been created by companies who have concerning links to the Chinese government, and it's quite a data hoover from what I have read.
Oh, well, so, my naive outlook was that maybe it was the parents of all the young people on TikTok who were there checking up on what it is that the kids are getting up to. 41% of TikTok users are aged between 16 and 24, which is pretty remarkable. I thought what could this new app maybe be? I mean, it'll have a dumb name like Bangshot or Diplip or something like that. Like, it'll be something vaguely onomatopoeic or rhymy. And then it'll be based around short videos, because they all are. They're all getting short. It'll be like 4 seconds long. And I try to think, what would be one that actually you and I might be into? And so, I don't know, if there are any potential angel investors out there, how about an app based around 4 second videos of famous historic moments, but with ostriches filtered into them? So you do the moon landing, but it's an ostrich in a spacesuit. Or Martin Luther King in Washington, an ostrich has a dream. Or if it's the Kennedy assassination, you have an ostrich slumped over in a car while another ostrich in a pink suit and a jacket scrambles over the hood.
What's it called?
Ostalk. I haven't gotten that far. I thought the product would speak for itself, frankly. I didn't think it needed branding.
No, the product will threaten to peck your eye out from 8 foot high in case you don't invest in it. Oh, that was, as elevator pitches go, that one was upsetting.
But don't tell me you wouldn't watch videos of famous historic moments with ostriches in them. Ostrich Gump.
No, I'm just imagining, and I think my favourite one would be Ostrich Neville Chamberlain returning home from talking to Ostrich Hitler with, I hold in my beak a piece of paper.
So that was what I thought might happen in May.
Okay, so in June it will be the birthday of Queen Elizabeth II. It's her official birthday, but I can never tell which one's official and which one's unofficial. I think the official one is when she was actually born, and the unofficial one is her age in lizard years. But she will be 95 years old next year. I think next year Philip's going to go, and I think he's going to go just before he reaches 100, and it's going to be like a batsman getting 99 and then getting stumped just out of his crease. And it's going to be the Queen will hire one of her personal assassins to take him out, so she doesn't have to write an awkward letter to her husband.
So she doesn't have to send him the telegram. Yeah, she doesn't have precisely. To give him, what, they get money as well. He's definitely going to ask her for the whatever it is, 2.5 grand or whatever it is they get given when they turn 100.
Do you get 2.5 grand for turning 100?
I think it's something like 2,500 euro in Ireland. Hang on, I'm going to Google it because I feel like we've talked about it.
I mean, in Ireland perhaps, but over here, I mean, you're going to get like a 10 pob note and a slap on the cheeks.
Yeah, 2,540 euro you get in Ireland when you turn 100.
Oh, right. Well, when I'm 99, I'm going to get Irish citizenship, please. When I'm 99, I'm going to marry you.
Ben, you're going to die before me, let's be honest. That's going to sound funny if I die having the surgery that I'm about to do, because I'm recording this in advance.
Well, if that happens, I won't release this episode for a few years. Tragedy plus time. Tragedy plus time.
Oh yeah, you got to make it valuable. I get more expensive with age.
Your death is like a fine wine. I did look at some of the oddest birthday presents Her Majesty had received. In 2015, the governor of the British Virgin Islands presented her with a bag filled with salt. It was a symbolic throwback to the tradition of the British Virgin Islands presenting the monarch with a bag of salt as a tax on the production of minerals on Salt Island. I don't know whether the Queen threw it over her shoulder or tried to use it to melt her, one of her children. this was not a birthday present, but in 2011, when she visited Ireland, one of the Queen's royal mares may have a foal by the stallion Big Bad Bob, who is owned by a racehorse breeder called Christina Patino, friend of the family.
I know of Big Bad Bob, yes. We've had dinner together. He's an excellent conversationalist. He's not as big or as bad as they say.
I'm sorry, again, being both a man from a racehorsing dynasty and also a homosexual living in London, I feel you must know at least 7 Big Bad Bobs.
I mean, all of them within 2 kilometres or less of me, apparently.
Yeah. But this particular Big Bad Bob, gifted to the Queen via the medium of Christina Patino, $8,615 worth of semen.
Yeah.
Which will be sent out to the citizens of this nation.
But my favourite one—it's
like going to be playing Russian roulette. Is it Boris? Is it Big Bad Bob? Who knows?
In 2016, for her birthday, the Kingdom of Jordan gave her the most baffling birthday present I can imagine. We've talked a lot about presents for monarchs and presidents, but this is off the chart, my friend. They gave her a ceramic figure of Prince Charles,
right,
alongside the cartoon character Postman Pat.
Sorry, it was a ceramic figure of Prince Charles alongside Postman Pat? Or was there a comma in between those?
No, that was it. With a Jordanian flag in the background.
Did Prince Charles' ceramic figure go, "Postman Pat, is it? What do you do?"
I do hope so.
What's happening in July? July is going to be sort of summer holiday time, and you sort of... I think people are going to be so confused about being allowed to go abroad that everyone's just going to have staycations. Everyone's going to stay in the UK. Like, I think, you know, Clacton-on-Sea and Weston-super-Mare and Great Yarmouth are going to be flooded with tourists. And you know, maybe they'll be the micronations that'll have to erect border controls. And eventually word will spread and they'll become playgrounds only for the super rich. And eventually people will have onshore bank accounts hidden in the tax havens in, you know, Bangor in Wales, anywhere with a pier, basically. But the main thing that I'm looking forward to in July is we're going to get a summer of sport back again. As Wimbledon,
yes, we are.
Wimbledon and the Open Championship Golf were both cancelled last year, and so I imagine they'll try and make up for that in 2020 by running back-to-back championships. Obviously, trying to hit a shot back-to-back in golf is not recommended, so presumably there'll be multiple concussions. And I think as well, I mean, Wimbledon is a tiring experience for anyone. So after 4 weeks of Wimbledon, my money's on Sue Barker locks Novak Djokovic and Dominic Thiem in a small room with a revolver and a single bullet and demands one of them put an end to the whole experience. but I had a look at the first winners of those championships. It's a good proper like name for the first winner of Wimbledon. Do you want to guess when the first Wimbledon championship was played?
It's 1888, isn't it?
It's not bad. 1877. You're pretty close. It was only contested by men that year, of course. The final was delayed for 3 days because of rain.
Great.
And the winner was a chap called Spencer Gore from Wandsworth, so not very far from Wimbledon.
Yeah, no, right just down the road from me as well. In my mind, I thought it was going to be a Randolph.
Yeah, Spencer Gore is pretty good, though, as a posh name. And the first winner of the Open Championship was a guy called Willie Park. He contested alongside 7 other golfers. There were only eight golfers in total took part in the first Open Championship in 1860. This is Willie Park Sr. And he won the championship by 2 shots from a chap called Old Tom Morris, because it was also a young Tom Morris. Do you know what the trophy is? What trophy he took home for winning the first Open Championship?
Was it a new set of golf clubs?
No.
Was it a speedboat?
It was a cuddly toy. The famous trophy now is the claret jug. The silver claret jug is given to the winner of the Open Championship. But that wasn't the prize for the first 12 years. The first prize was originally a belt, a red leather belt with a silver buckle, which was worth £25. That was the type of trophy you might have been given if you won archery or a jousting competition back in the medieval times, because it was donated by a chap called the Earl of Eglinton, who was very interested in medieval pageantry and stuff like that. But young Tom Morris won the championship 3 years in a row in 1868, 69, and 70. So he got to keep the belt and they had to get a new trophy. But they didn't get one in time for the following year. So they didn't have an Open Golf Championship in 1871 because they hadn't sorted a new trophy.
Could they not just nick his belt?
Yeah, no, a bit like the old Jules Rimet World Cup. They allowed him to keep it once he'd won it three times. So, yeah, that's what happened. So I'm very much looking forward to a prop. It doesn't really feel like summer unless you've got like a different sport on every channel for a good month and a half.
Well, precisely. And July is just going to be the one that whets your appetite because in August, it's the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo. I cannot wait. Now, just a brief word on the mascots. One of them is called Mirai Toa, who is a figure with blue checkered patterns inspired by the game's official logo. The character apparently has a strong sense of justice and is described as very athletic. And my favourite thing, apparently, he has the ability to teleport anywhere instantly, thus making him a cheat and someone who should be disqualified immediately from any track and field event. But my favourite thing about the games in Tokyo next year is that, obviously, because it's Japan, there are going to be robots.
Oh, yes, please.
Are there going to be robots to collect shot puts and discuses and javelins that are thrown in the track and field? But there is going to be a fleet of driverless cars. I have no doubt in my mind, Barry, when I say the 2021 Tokyo Olympics is going to be the event at which the robots take over. It's going to be the first time a competitor wins a gold medal in every single event across every single discipline is whatever emerges as the T-1000 destroys the entire field. I also know that some wag will go to the Paralympics and try to claim they're allowed in because they had COVID. You know that's going to happen.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, definitely.
I can see. I think 2021 is going to be when the singularity occurs.
Yeah, the five rings will meld together into one single ring, in a symbolic act.
What as caused by the Sauron Bot 10,000?
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to sport again. September. What's happening in September? I was thinking. The schools go back, and you know, I'll chat about schools in a bit. But I was trying to think what other things might happen around this time of year. In sort of a typical news story, and one of the things we haven't mentioned yet is you usually get a big corporate scandal every year. we have an Enron story, or you know, a Northern Rock, or the fuel emissions, one of those things. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, BMW used panda fur to stuff their seats. HSBC invented the number a billion. It doesn't actually exist. Or maybe Facebook finally collects all of our faces in their book, and they can conduct the ritual to give Mark Zuckerberg the eternal life that he so craves.
God, he looks more and more like an empty vessel with every appearance in front of Congress.
That's why he feeds on our faces. I bet there is genuinely a book of all our faces.
I imagine this. Yes, I'd like to hope it's like a 25-foot high vellum book.
Yeah. But obviously, as with all of these corporate scandals, I'm imagining like there'll be parliamentary hearings and there'll be Christ to boycott whatever the product is, whatever company this is. But the Premier League will have just kicked off and Strictly Come Dancing will be back on telly, so we'll all just forget about it. That's probably what'll happen. And the schools will have gone back, so I kind of imagining after the year it's been, nobody will be able to quite adjust. So kids will just invent their own one-way systems. The arrows will have been pulled up and they'll still be like, you know, oh no, that was what we did last year. We're used to this now. Masks will be banned, but kids will keep bringing them in. There'll be a black market trade in hand sanitizer. But as the teachers, I'm particularly sorry for, because some of them have had to teach from home, obviously, over the past year. So maybe they're bringing in laundry to get washed during break time, wandering around in dressing gown and slippers and ordering Domino's pizza to class 7B. And I just had a look about schools in general. The highest primary school in the world is in Tibet. 5,373 metres above sea level. So you could definitely say you're a high achiever if you attend that school.
You could, but...
Anyone who can climb up to it, for fuck's sake, Ben, that's an achievement in itself. That is that's higher than base camp of Mount Everest.
Yeah, I don't think people are going there from Surbiton.
I'd like them to, though. Do you know where the world's oldest active school is?
Is it in Africa?
No, it's in England.
Oh, it's going to be in somewhere off the beaten track, like Shropshire, isn't it?
It's in Canterbury, founded in 597 AD. The King's School in Canterbury has been going for 1500 years, basically.
Good luck. Was it set up by the first Archbishop?
Why, what a good question, Ben. Yes, it was. It was founded by Augustine of Canterbury, the first Archbishop of Canterbury. He's considered the founder of the English Church and also the founder of this really old school. Presumably they have moved on from styluses and wax tablets. You know, I'm imagining the kids might have access to computers. The largest school in the world, in terms of number of students, is a school in Lucknow in India. It has 32,000 students attending it daily, over 1,000 classrooms.
Good. Well, 1,000 classrooms, respect to that for, you know, maintaining class sizes of 30.
Yeah, but imagine like one of those school assemblies where, you know, someone has done something and the teacher's like, all right, one of you egged my car. We're going to sit here while 32,000 people stare at me, not owning up to it. Okay, I'm going to punish you all. Oh, no, wait, actually, you could overpower me quite easily. I'm not punishing anybody.
Yeah, I mean, that's not an assembly. That's a gig.
Yeah. It's a decent attendance at a championship match. Conversely, there was an elementary school in Turin in Italy in 2014 that only had one teacher and one student, which made it the smallest school in the world. And one other school fact that I enjoyed is that in France, some schools, mealtime is considered part of the school curriculum, which is the most French thing ever.
What, as in you have to learn to appreciate the food?
You've got to learn about different foods and where they come. The schools tend to try and source local food and all that stuff, and you've got to learn good table etiquette and good manners and stuff. So they instill the air of the gourmet in kids at a young age in France. So that's September.
In October, in a way, continuing your school theme, there is the most important sporting event of the year. You've had your fill of Euro 2020, you've had your Wimbledon, you've had your Olympics. In Northamptonshire, on the second Sunday of October, there'll be the World Conquer Championship, my
friend.
Yes! Since 1965, conquer players, or conquistadors...
Oh no!
...from around the world have gathered to compete in a knockout to be the world champion in team and individual pursuits. There's a couple of things I love about it. Firstly, it began in a very informal way when a group of anglers in the local town of Ashton held a conquer contest at the Checkered Skipper pub because the weather was too bad to go fishing. And the event was held for 45 years right in Ashton before it moved to a bigger location in 2009. But there have been, not necessarily controversial, but there have been times when the tournament has been at risk because of conker shortages. In 1976, they had to be flown in from Jersey, especially.
What?
Yep.
No, that's nonsense. They just didn't look hard enough.
Yeah. Well, apparently concerns for the event as a whole were voiced over the horse chestnut leaf miner moth, which was apparently laying waste to horse chestnuts in the region. And my favourite fact about it is that on the 9th of October 2017, John Riley won the men's tournament at the age of 85, making him very possibly the oldest world champion on the planet.
Wow, that is great. I bet he's got really knotty, knotty knuckles as well. Like he looks like a horse chestnut tree himself.
Oh, I'd hope so. He's a Chelsea pensioner as well.
Oh, that's amazing.
And my two last favourite things about it was, I'm just going to read to you from the early Roll of Honour from 1965 to 1976. You'll see why. So the winners were Ron Marsh, Sid Walden, Liam Collins, Tim Winham, Peter Midlane, John M. Hilliard, Tim Dix, Ron Marsh, Peter Midlane, John Marsh, Jorge Ramirez Carrillo. And...
where did he come from?
Mexico.
Wow.
I just like the idea that this Zorro of the Conquer World turned up in Northampton and rinsed everyone and then disappeared into the night to be seen again. And my other favourite thing is in the team competition, in terms of who has won the most times, in no particular order, you have the Seabright Arms, the Checkered Skipper B Team, the Wood Bees, the Peterborough Nutters, and the Minge Petals. And then following them as the most successful teams are the Magnificent 7-3 and France.
France would have done better, but they were too busy learning how to eat and drink properly.
Yes, of course.
Oh my god, let's go. Let's go to it. Let's do a special.
Let's absolutely do that. We have to do a wonky festival special. I think that's a very good idea.
If we get to a certain level on Patreon to pay for tickets to go to things around the country, let's try and go to like six barmy, like the cheese rolling thing, and sit at several barmy British festivals. More on which in a minute, because I'm about to tell you about Bonfire Night.
What we need to do is go there, but you and me need to commentate on it like we were like a 1970s BBC commentator.
I mean, or we go completely the opposite direction and we do like shoutcasting, like esports, where it's really like high powered, like overly aggressive, excitable commentary. One or the other.
One or the other. I'm writing that down now as a new Patreon goal.
That would be so good. November. What's going to happen in November? One of the things, you haven't had a lot of, you know, big, massive good news in 2021 due to our predictions yet. So I'm imagining we get like a big scientific breakthrough in November, maybe. Possibly the cure for cancer. Fingers crossed. And then scientists will say that they would have done it earlier if people had worn fucking masks in 2020. But the great thing will be that when they've cured cancer, everyone exhausted by the past decade can immediately start smoking again.
And also everyone who has received Boris Johnson's vials of sperm in the post after they've enjoyed them.
After they've dispensed with them. But yeah, Bonfire Night happens in the UK in November, November the 5th. I think we've mentioned quite recently on the show, there was a Catholic plot to blow up the Houses of Parliament when the King would be there opening it in 1605. And it was caught where they had lots of gunpowder hidden underneath the chamber, but they were caught in the act. And the most famous conspirator was a chap called Guy Fawkes. And every November, basically since then, they have celebrated the foiling of this plot by burning effigies of Guy Fawkes on bonfires around the country. You know, when you lay it out exactly what people are doing, it's... You know, people look at protests in other countries when the West do something horrific and there's burnings of American flags or effigies of US presidents and go, well, of course, we wouldn't do that sort of thing over here. And you're like, every fucking November you get children around a bonfire and you burn a Catholic. I read a bit about, you can still see Guy Fawkes's lantern. He was carrying a lantern when he was caught, and it's in the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford. Elizabeth I actually was queen before this happened. She preceded the Bonfire Night, but she did celebrate fireworks. She liked fireworks so much that she created a title for the lucky person that she thought to be the best firework maker in England. They would be known as the Fire Master of England.
Sweet. That is a hell of a title. That should be given posthumously to Keith Flint.
Yes, absolutely. And but she wasn't the first person to use fireworks in England. Henry VII, during his wedding in 1486, he held the first ever recorded fireworks display in Britain, because his marriage signified the uniting of the warring houses of York and Lancaster, so it was a big, big event. It was once illegal to not celebrate Bonfire Night in Britain. Basically, until 1959, it was illegal not to celebrate it, apart from, can you imagine when they might have sort of restricted the celebration in some way?
I imagine during wartime.
Yes, but it was still illegal to not celebrate, so obviously they couldn't have fireworks displays, but people still had to celebrate indoors. Presumably not setting off fireworks, you know, just burning a guy on a bonfire.
Well, I'd like to hope at that point they just had a guy in a bonfire and just bits of orange and yellow tissue paper,
yeah,
that they waved around it.
But maybe in November we should go to Ottery St Mary in Devon, because on Bonfire Night in Ottery St Mary, locals take turns carrying large barrels of burning tar on their shoulders.
Getting ready to tarmac the road for the next day?
I don't quite know where this came from, but it's a tradition they still carry out to this day. It's much less wholesome than cheese rolling and conker fights. I imagine a few more injuries might happen during this particular celebration. But yeah, maybe we add that to the rota when we tour Britain next year.
Wow, yeah, that's a great idea. And to finish us off, we've got December. Now, December is the anniversary of two fairly monumental events in British history. It will be the centenary of the Anglo-Irish Treaty, signed mm-hmm. London by the British and Irish representatives, and I imagine to celebrate it, there will be a new treaty where the United Kingdom cedes Northern Ireland to the rest of Ireland.
Oh, that would be a nice 100th. Instead of sending us a telegram and $2,500, we get Northern yeah. Ireland back.
It'd be delightful, yes. It would stop being Ireland's asterisk. Come at me, unionist.
No, to be fair, every time we think about it, we swear as well, so...
And the other thing, it'll be on the 18th of December, it'll be the 80th anniversary of the National Service Act, which, you know, meant that people had to be, were either conscripted to the army or had to do their national service for the good of the nation. And I think we should bring it back next year. It's going to be necessary because by December of next year, the number of British fishing boats that will have been sunk by angry French fishing boats means that your national service will mean you've got to go out into the channel and catch 15 sprat.
Yeah. I think that's a suitable metaphor for the year ahead. People wading up to their waist trying to grab slippery fish in the middle of the channel.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, considering what we've got to look forward to, we've got that, we've got Brexit negotiations, so if you don't want to be a fish, then you're going to have to be Chancellor of the Exchequer, because we'll run through that. And I'd like to hope that at some point, Gareth Southgate will get the English national football manager, will get a touch of the conscience and go, I don't really think we should be trying to qualify for a World Cup in Qatar, where thousands of people have died building the stadium. And so again, the national service will be having to manage the football team for 15 minutes.
Oh, we'd all get a go.
Yeah, exactly.
I had another idea, is that because obviously every year we also have like a hero emerges, like we had Captain Tom in 2020. So maybe next year we'll have like, you know, a woman will make like 15 million sausage rolls for a food bank, or there'll be a member of the GB Olympic team who doesn't win a medal but falls over in their event, but they're charming and self-deprecating in interviews, or there'll be a pensioner who runs in the Epsom Derby or something like that, and whoever, maybe it'll be Gareth Southgate again, but whoever it is, they obviously then have to record a charity single, because that's what you do nowadays. I'm imagining Somewhere Over the Rainbow with the military choir and the ghost of Dame Vera Lynn. And then early in 2022, I'm just going to tip over into January, we discovered they have a secret pass as like a body snatcher or something, because we can't have it. We can't have any nice heroes anymore.
No, absolutely not.
But don't worry, they'll be rehabilitated on a reality TV show in about a decade's time, because that's also what happens these days.
Oh no, that's what 2022 will be. The entirety of the United Kingdom will turn into, we all think we're celebrities, please get us out of here.
Yeah.
And we'll be broadcast to the rest of the EU.
Well, we've got a lot to look forward to next year. I hope you're all linking arms, sinking a glass of something, and toasting the death of one of the worst years we've all had to live through, I imagine.
there's that very famous picture, I think, of the new year on the way out as an old decrepit man, and the new year on the way in as a beautiful baby. And I imagine this year, the babe of 2021 is putting a pillow over the face of 2020.
But this baby is the child of a mother who's been drinking heavily for the last 9 months. Thanks for supporting us all the past year, guys. It's been a long one, and we really appreciate it. We appreciate the support of those who support us monetarily on Patreon. We appreciate those people who write reviews. We appreciate those of you who just timidly listen to us and on your daily commute or wherever it has been. We hope you get to do a few more commutes in 2021, and we hope we get to keep making podcasts like this and making your day a little bit sillier / stupider.
Damn right, the both of those. Merry New Year, everyone.
Bye-bye.